I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which this podcast is being recorded, the Gunai Kurnai Nation. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, especially those listening here today. Welcome to Catch Me Outside My Comfort Zone, a lifestyle podcast that focuses on the outside of our zones as well as the inside of our homes. I'm your host, Alyssa Sutherland, designer, entrepreneur, self-development enthusiast, and your ultimate hype up sis. Come with me as I take you on an empowered and inspiring journey to build the life of your dreams. This is your safe space where you are supported, you are guided, and you know that you are more than capable of achieving everything you have always desired. So get comfortable with being uncomfortable, settle in for the ride. This is your life, and it's time to claim it. Hello, my darlings. Welcome back to season 2, episode 2 of Catch Me Outside My Comfort Zone, and guest number 2. That's right. I know you guys just want a solo episode of hearing my voice for a whole hour, but you know what? We are learning and growing and evolving, remember, in season 2? And that's why we've got a few guests to kick it off. And today's guest is super exciting. It's very different, and I feel like a lot of people are going to be surprised by today's guest, but I'm thrilled with our guest, and it was like the funnest chat ever. And obviously this episode, it's going to go for a while, but it's going to be juicy. It's going to be so worth the listen. So our guest today is Lisa Ireland. She is an author, and tomorrow is the launch of her 8th book, The Studio Girls, which I cannot wait to read. And she is hosting a launch tomorrow night at the Sale Library, which I am going to, and I can't wait. I've never been to a book launch before, and it's on my bucket list to launch a book one day, so I'm going to get huge expander energy going to this. Lisa is just such a ball of fun. I love her energy. We get along like a house on fire. We actually met last year through the Joy Collective group, which is hosted by Lisa Heyman in her studio, my photographer, where I go and get all my photos done and hang out with a group of other women who run businesses, and we just connected last year at one of those events, and we've been in touch ever since, and we just hype each other up, and I was so excited to get her on the podcast in celebration of the launch of her new book. And I'm going to just take it into the episode now because she's got so much to say, and it was just so much fun. Like, this is full of good energy, and I just kept nodding my head as she was speaking in this interview, and I just kept thinking, oh, this is such a good episode. So hang in tight, get yourself a cup of tea, get yourself a glass of wine. We're drinking some bubbles as we're recording this. Lisa put on an absolute spread. I'll have to post some photos of that later in the week, but honestly, cannot wait to get into this. And thank you so much, Lisa, for fitting in this podcast in your very busy schedule in the lead up to the launch. I loved having you on the podcast, and I know everyone else is going to love this episode too. Welcome to the Catch Me Outside My Comfort Zone podcast, Lisa.
Hi, Alyssa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me in your beautiful home and for putting on this beautiful spread for us tonight.
It's pretty nice to be kicking back on a Thursday night, but it's not Thursday, is it? I don't even know what day it is.
It's a Tuesday night, but our listeners will be listening to this on a Monday.
Okay. Oh, and well, this has kind of got a Sunday night vibe.
It is. Yeah. Now you've switched to Sunday. Has that first wine gone to your head pretty quickly?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. Yeah. We're having a celebratory wine in celebration of Lisa's book launch, which is happening tomorrow.
Yeah, 30th of April is my release date for my next book, so that's pretty exciting.
Which is very exciting. And this is your eighth book, or your ninth book.
No, eighth. This is the eighth book.
How exciting.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. It's a bit nerve-wracking too. So, like, I'm always a little bit antsy before a new book comes out because, you know, up until now, I've read it and a few other people who I get feedback from have read it, and, of course, my publishers have read it, but nobody else much has read it. And so you think, oh, you know, you think it's great, but hopefully the audience will like it too. So it's always a little bit nerve-wracking because you're just waiting to see how it's going to be received.
Absolutely. And, like, is it a bit different to your other books, this one?
Yeah, it is. This one is... Almost all my books are at least partially set in Australia.
Yeah.
And lots of them, some of them are set in Gippsland, some of them are set in Geelong, which is both those places are where my family's from. So, you know, local areas and Australians will recognise the settings. But this one is set in Hollywood.
Which is very cool and exciting. But let's wind it back. And first question I love to ask all my guests is obviously, what are you doing outside your comfort zone? It can be this week, this month, this year, just whatever's relevant for you.
This is going to make you laugh, but it's this. I'm doing a podcast because it's really funny. I was saying to someone the other day that when I do, so you would think I do a fair few.
I was going to say you've done many podcasts.
Yeah, I have done many podcasts. And podcasts are not as bad as radio, which I have to do next week. So,
because that's just one take, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Live radio is really super scary. At least with a podcast, if I just asked Alyssa before we started recording, I was like, if I say something really, really dumb, you can edit it out, right? She was like,
yeah, I like to keep it pretty chill. I can't be bothered. No.
But yeah, I do a lot of publicity, obviously. That seems to be normal for authors these days.
We
do get out there amongst the people, which is great. And I am not – lots of writers are introverted and I'm not. So good for me, right? That's quite lucky. And I come from a teaching background, and so doing events, live events, doesn't really scare me.
Mm.
I mean, I get a little bit of nervous adrenaline with that, but I love getting feedback from the audience, so I can see the audience and I know if they're bored by what I'm saying. I know if they're interested because I can tell by their body language, and so I know to keep telling a story or to wind it up or whatever. But with a podcast, I mean, this is pretty good because you're here, so at least I can see your face.
Am I bored?
Yeah, if you nod off, I'll know to shut up.
But
generally I find podcasts, and particularly if I'm not doing it with the person live in a studio, if I'm, you know, on the phone or on the laptop or whatever doing it, I find that a little bit tricky because I can't feed off the other person's energy. So this is a little tiny bit outside my comfort zone.
I feel like you're just saying that.
But I also find, and I know this is, I've just said that I'm an extrovert, and I am. Love spending time with people. That's how I get my energy. I'm energized by spending time with friends and readers and all sorts of people. I love that, and I think it helps me as a writer because I love listening to other people's stories and being with other people. But I am a little bit challenged about talking about myself. And so, I mean, I've just spent 5 minutes talking about myself, but I'm not someone who I don't know. I think it's an Australian thing too. We're not programmed to talk ourselves up and say, this is the greatest book ever. And you have to go out and sell the book.
Yeah.
And whilst I love what I do and I'm in love with the story, obviously, because I wrote it.
Yeah.
But I find it really hard to talk it up. I'm kind of like, oh, I wrote this story. Buy it if you want. If you don't, I don't mind. But I do. It's like, I'd like you to buy
it. You need to read this book. It's going to change your life.
Yeah. I can't do that. So I find that is really outside my comfort zone, but it's part of my job and I have to do it.
Yeah. You'll overcome it maybe by your 10th book.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
No, but I'm so grateful that you've allowed me to interview you, especially when you've got all this other press going on And I'm really excited because I'm going to be at your book launch tomorrow night. So I'll get to hear it all over again and see you in live, but I totally relate back to when you have to sit in a live audience and present something. I thrive on public speaking, obviously why I decided to start a podcast, but it's not, you're right, like you're not getting the audience reaction, especially not instantaneously. Like every now and then people will message me and be like, I loved that episode, or I felt like there was a couple of moments where I accidentally replied to you as if you were just on the phone to me or whatever. But most of the time I just never know. Like I talked about this with my guest last week. It's just like you kind of just like bottle it up and send it on its way, and you just never know how the audience reacts to it, except I can look at the analytics, obviously. But yeah, it's funny when you sit there in front of an audience and present, you can just like feed off the energy and keep going. I had to present at a conference last year, and there was this one guy sitting pretty close to the front, this like professor, and he was like, had his eyes closed.
Oh my goodness.
And I was just looking at him like, you're throwing me off so much, because there was other people in the crowd that were like nodding and smiling, and actually some people like getting emotional as well. And then this one guy's just sitting there like with his eyes closed and like, I just had to block him out and look away.
There's always one.
Yeah.
I swear to you, I've done so many events and I had someone actually fall asleep, not just sitting there with their eyes closed. It really threw me. It was early in my career. I was about maybe three books in or four books in.
Yeah.
But I just thought, this is hilarious. It's not just exactly a classic, a stellar like event for me. But having said that, it was a really good morning tea. So it was definitely worth it.
Okay, it was worth it for the morning tea.
Absolutely. And that's what I meant. I'm not just there to make money. I really love connecting with readers in any way, shape or form. And just to be clear, like I'm really happy for people to borrow books from the library.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, and when I was a young mum and I couldn't afford to buy books, and still to this day I'm a library member and I borrow books. And this is actually something interesting that people might not know, but Australian authors, I don't know about authors in other countries, but Australian authors, we get compensation from the government for books in libraries.
Ah.
So never feel bad never feel like you're depriving an author of an income by reading a library book, because we're actually, it's too complicated to explain to you how we get compensated, but we do get decent compensation from the government.
Oh, that's good to know.
Under, it's called PLR, the Public Lending Rights, and we're given compensation for having books in libraries that would have maybe have let been sales if the book wasn't available to read in the library.
Yeah. Oh, that's really handy to know.
Yeah.
I love buying books because I love owning them, because I'm not a very, like, I'm really aggressive with books and fold pages and bend all that. Like, I'm just like, I have no.
You're loving your books.
Yeah. But I borrow books off people all the time, and I've got to be so conscious of like keeping them in good condition.
Yeah.
But my love language is giving someone a book to read, because it's just like, I loved this book so much. I feel like maybe the next thing I need to do is actually go out and buy that book and give it to someone else rather than giving them my copy, because I've probably got half a dozen books out there that I don't think I'll ever get back. But
that is a problem, but I do have a solution for that.
Yeah.
I've got these bookmarks
that
I put if I do. And I'm a bit fussier than you with books, so I won't be lending you any of my books.
Noted.
Maybe I will, but I'll just have to let go of that idea that they might come back to me in pristine condition. But I have this bookmark, and it says, you know, this book belongs to Lisa Ireland and was borrowed. It was, you know, borrowed on this date. And there's like a stub. I've got the stub, and I write, this book is borrowed by Alyssa on this date. And so then it stops you from forgetting who you've loaned the book to, because that used to be my problem. I would loan books to people, and then I think, who has my book?
Yeah.
I don't know. So there you go.
That's a really smart idea.
It's like a little lending ledger.
Like your own little library.
Yeah.
I love that. But then I'm just like too, like I'm not a people pleaser, but at the end of the day, it's like when it comes to this, I'm just like, maybe I should just let them have that, because most of those books that I do lend are often like a self-help book,
yeah,
because I've like, and if you're listening to this and you've got one of them, you can read it. You don't have to feel like you have to give it back to me. But it's just like, it's a matter of I've given that to that person because I know they need to read it.
Yeah.
And they will read it when they're ready to.
I have so many books now that I am prepared to let books go. Mm. Like if I lend a book, I think, well, if I get it back, that's great. But if I don't, it doesn't matter. I
can, yeah.
You know, I'm happy
life
that
goes
that person.
On.
Yeah, I'm happy that that person has enjoyed the book and
yeah.
and they've got something out of it.
But, yeah, they're probably yeah. yeah there's
but
no
I like that little lending system because you know I'm a super organized person.
Yeah,
and so
love that
appeals to me as an A type. That appeals to me that idea that I've got a little ledger, even if I never call the books back in, even if I never do anything about it.
You're just
I know
like
where it's gone.
You know who's got it.
Yeah,
I love it. That's so good. Well, yeah, let's. The reason I really wanted to get you on the podcast is because reading is really in at the moment to start with. I know it's your
so
whole
cool.
it's your whole world and everything, but like there's this whole trend called book talk as
yes.
well. So everyone's into it. I even did a podcast last year about being in my reading era, which has dropped off.
Oh, can I interview you just for a second?
Yeah.
Who's your go-to author in, like, have you got an author that you really love that you've read lots of?
My go-to author, okay, there's different answers for different categories.
Yeah, of course.
So my cousin has got me onto this Greek mythology, it's a bit of smart vibes.
Yeah.
Katie Roberts is her name.
I follow Katie Roberts on Threads.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know who Katie Roberts is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love.
I'll be upfront. I haven't read any, but she's very cool on Threads.
Yeah. Okay. So that's.
Because I had to leave Twitter.
Yeah.
So I used to have, you know, engaged quite a bit with other authors on Twitter, but Twitter is for me no more. And Threads is not the same. But anyway, I follow Katie Roberts and she's a really interesting person.
Yeah, her books are cool. And I think there's like maybe six or more even of them. So I'm on a journey getting through all of them, which is great. That's my first kind of – it's not fantasy as such, I don't think, but it's like – it's different.
I don't know. I'll have to look up what she actually writes.
Yes.
Now.
For like I'm very much into self-development books. That's like been my journey for the last few years. Gabby Bernstein, she's a great self-help book writer.
Yeah.
But also most impactful book I've read is the series from The Tattooist of Auschwitz.
I don't know her.
So she interviews actual like survivors from the Holocaust. So the first book was about this guy who got a job in Auschwitz as the tattooist,
yes.
like putting the numbers on everyone.
Yes.
Then there's a following book and a following book. So I've just finished the third one, which is called Three Sisters, and they, like, spoiler alert, all survive. But she interviewed all three of them, like they were in their 90s and stuff like that. And so it was the most realistic take on their experience, and it was really fucked, to be quite honest. It was really confronting. There was like a point where I nearly vomited reading the book because of how confronting it was. But like that's real. That happened, you know, and I encourage everyone to read that because it's such a big part of history, but it's like just so uncomprehendable. So the way she's written that is really well because it's like it's really easy to understand from someone who like, I guess, putting together the different parts of it because obviously they've all come from different parts of Europe to then go into the camps and then just, like, their different experiences and stuff.
You might like my friend Kelly Rimmel. Mm-hmm. She writes all sorts of fiction, but her family background is Polish.
Yeah.
And she has written a spectacular book, several spectacular books. But one is called The Things We Cannot Say, and that is a dual timeline.
Yeah.
And set partially in Poland and partially in current day Australia.
Yeah.
But another one called The Warsaw Orphan,
which
is really amazing. I won't tell you the plot because it's one of those things that it's best experienced, but it's along the lines of the types of things that you've been.
You have to
about.
Send that
she did
to me.
Amazing research for those books.
Yeah,
she went to Poland for the first one. She went with her auntie, who has not been back to Poland for some time, but she went. They went back to Poland to do the research,
wow.
So, which was amazing.
Yeah, I just found it very interesting. But other than that, I do love a good like romance novel, just something easy breezy. Just to get you through, just to have something to look forward to when you go to bed at night to read.
Yeah, I'm a big fan in that genre. I'm a big fan of Emily Henry.
Oh.
She's my go-to in that. If I'm looking for something light and romancy, I love her voice. I just think she's so, you know, in that rom-com kind of genre. I just think she's amazing.
Yeah, I loved, is it Beach Read?
Yes, I love that. But my favourite one is called Book Lovers.
Yeah, I need to read that one.
Oh, that's my absolute favourite of hers. I love that. If you like her voice, you'll love that one. It's a shame because I read that one first and I've liked all her others, but I've never liked any as much as Book Lovers. But I think it's because it's set in the publishing world, in the publishing industry, and because obviously that's my job.
Yeah.
It really appeals to me, but it's a really good book.
Did you read The People We Meet on Vacation?
Yeah. No, I haven't read that one yet.
I'm pretty sure that's by Emily Henry.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's, hang on. I'm looking at it. It's right behind you. There's Beach Read. What's it called? Yeah. You and Me on Vacation. That's what it's called.
Oh, no, there's another one.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh.
The People You Meet on Vacation. I didn't read it, though. Sorry, Emily Henry, if you're listening to this.
I haven't read that one, so maybe I won't.
It just took way too long to get to, it was very predictable.
Oh, okay.
But it also didn't have much impact.
Okay.
And it was just like a storyline over too many years. It's like you didn't have to go back 10 years. You could have maybe just gone back 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
And then, I don't know. Anyway, it took me like 6 months to read. So that says how much it was good. How good it was. Anyway, we're getting very sidetracked.
That's so unusual.
I knew this would happen. But obviously you're an author, but you haven't always been.
No.
So do you want to take us back as far as you feel like going to, we love to hear people's journey
it's going to feel like I'm going way, way, way back, but I'll fast forward.
Okay.
So
you go.
I want to go back to when I was a little kid, a little kid and then in high school. So when I was tiny, I loved books. I went to school when I was 4 and a half and I could already read.
Wow.
And that was because my mum and dad both loved books and they read to me lots. And so I was just a voracious reader. I just loved stories and I used to write my own stories, you know, because I grew up in the outer western suburbs of Melbourne. And in the early days, we probably didn't have loads of money for new books. Like nobody did. No one where I lived had loads of money for new books all the time. So my first encounter with libraries was the mobile library.
Yeah.
The mobile library used to come to the corner shop once a fortnight, and my mum would take me down there and, you know, borrow as many books as I was allowed to borrow, and I would be through them in a few days.
Wow.
And then as I got older, I was able to go into town. Like I could ride my bike into the nearby town and go to the other library, like the real library, the proper library, and I would borrow heaps of books from there. But when I would run out of books, I'd write my own stories because I was like, well, I haven't got anything else to read, so I'm going to write something.
Yeah.
And so from a very early age, I was writing my own books. I was also a bit of an entrepreneur. You'll like this.
I love that.
I started writing books and selling them to people, like to my nana. She was my best customer. But I also started, when I was at school, I would make magazines and take them to school. My dad had a photocopier. He had a home office and he had a photocopier. This is when I was a bit older.
Yeah.
And so I would photocopy the magazine and then take that to school and sell copies at school.
How much were you making doing that?
Not a great deal. Well, it was pure profit though.
Yeah,
because,
true.
You know, I was using dad's photocopier. So I think it was, there were 10 cents a copy or whatever.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, probably wasn't making millions, but I was making money.
Yeah.
I was able to buy some mixed lollies at the corner store every week on my magazine money.
Yeah.
But then fast forward, went to high school, and actually I loved English and I was really good at English, and I read voraciously still, but I remember one teacher saying to me after a story, she read a story that I'd written, she said, you know, you could be a writer. But I just kind of thought, yeah, thanks for that. But like as if,
yeah,
like as if someone from the outer western suburbs of Melbourne could become a writer. And I'm in my 50s now. So when I went to school, like if you were a young woman, like lots of my friends didn't finish high school.
Mm.
We didn't have that sort of aspiration. We were sort of like, if you did well at school, you could, you would become like a nurse or a teacher. That was, they were the career pathways that you were funneled into.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I did quite well at school. I was actually the ducks of my school.
Oh, wow.
Alyssa's looking really surprised here, and I don't blame her.
I'm not surprised.
No. But I'm amazing. Surprised, you know, but I'm surprised now when I think about it. But the thing is, I did well at school. And so everyone at that school, and including my parents as well, was like, oh, you got really good marks. Didn't have any math science subjects, so I couldn't do medicine, and I would never have been able to do that. But they were like, oh, well, so what else would you do if you get really good marks? You should be a lawyer. And so they funneled me into law, and I kind of just, I know it seems weird these days because thankfully most young people these days seem to be more assertive than we were back then, but I kind of just went along with everyone said you should do law, so okay.
Yeah.
So I started an arts law degree, and I just hated it. Like, I hated law. I was so bored. And then I hated the arts portion of it as well, because I was doing journalism. And the journalism lecturer told me, like, 3 weeks into the semester that I couldn't write and that I would never get a job. And so I kind of just gave up. And then I'd spent some time working in the bank, and then eventually fell into teaching. And I loved teaching. I'm really passionate about education. I really thought, this is my niche. I really, really love this job. I love working with children. But the thing I loved the most was teaching kids to read and write.
Mm.
So that was still my passion. And then I had kids of my own, and I found that I didn't have the heart space to dedicate to teaching the way that I wanted to, like, because I had my own kids and my own family and whatever. So, and I'm a big believer, I'm not saying that other people with kids haven't got that heart space, like lots, but for me personally, I was such a dedicated young teacher, and I gave so much of myself to the job that once I had my own kids, and it didn't help that my eldest child had a serious illness, and so, like, I just didn't have the capacity to be at work and be fully present, and I don't think that's fair to children. Like, I think if you're a teacher, when you're at work, you need to be 100% at work, and I just couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So I sort of dropped back from that and started working just as a relief teacher, which, because I felt I could do a good job of that, like there wasn't the same sort of responsibility. But, and then during that time, I fell into, because I'm, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a super organized person, and I love being clean and tidy and organized. So I started my own business as a professional organizer, and I thought that would be my dream job too, like, because I'm so organized. And I love, like, I actually live to tidy up people's houses, not clean. I'm not, well, I like cleaning too, but like, if you said to me, could you come and help me tidy my wardrobe, I'd be like, yes, what time? Well, you know, when
get
do we
me
start?
There.
I love it. And so I thought that would be my dream job, but it turned out it's not. Working in that job full time didn't fill me up. It just wasn't for me. I was not, you know, I don't know. I think I didn't feel like I was bringing anything joyful to the world. Like, I wasn't really making a big difference in people's
lives. Kind of like a surface level
thing.
Yeah.
And so, but around about that time, I had my third child by this stage, and I was on parental leave from teaching, and I was still doing, like I said, a little bit of relief teaching. And actually, a friend of mine confessed to me. We were in our 30s and she was turning 40. Mm. She's a little tiny bit older than me. And she confessed to me that she was writing a book. And it was so weird because it was like a dirty little secret. Yeah. It was kind of like, she said, don't tell anyone. Like, don't tell anyone else. I'm only telling you.
Mm.
But I've been doing this writing course and I want to write a book. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be a writer too. Because all my life up until that point, and until she said it to me, I had never really put voice to it. But my whole life I'd been writing journals, I'd been writing things just for fun, I'd entered writing competitions. I'd never thought of it that I could do it as a job. But until my friend said, hey, I want to write a book and I'm doing something about it, and it kind of woke something up in me, and I went, me too, I want to do it too, I'm on board. And so I said to her, oh my God, I've always wanted to be a writer. And it, like I said, I didn't, if you'd asked me the day before, what did you always want to be when you were a kid? I probably would have said a teacher, but it was just this thing that woke up in me. And so I enrolled in a course, a professional writing and editing course, and I did novel writing as a subject. And so strangely enough, you have to write a novel for that subject. And that was where I got my start. So, and I still even then probably didn't believe that I would get published.
Yeah.
But once I started, I could not stop. And it just, you know, I just kept, it just had this drive to just keep going. And it, even when it was hard, even when I wasn't getting anywhere, even when it is, it's a hard thing to do because when you're in the beginning, you're not being paid.
Mm.
And if you've got family or if you've got another job or, in my case, both things, it's kind of like, why would you do this?
It's
like,
a lot of risk for not sure what the reward's going to be.
But I couldn't walk away from it. Yeah. I couldn't. And now, even now, every now and then I have a hissy fit when something goes wrong in my career and go, you know, a contract doesn't turn up or, you know, I start writing a book and then it doesn't work out the way I want it to and I give up on it or whatever. Every now and then I think, I'm not doing this anymore. This is ridiculous. I'm going to go and get a job in the bookshop or I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
I can't walk away from it. It's a compulsion. I just,
wow.
I can't not write. And I feel not myself when I'm not writing.
Wow.
So even I think if I didn't get paid for it, I would still do it. I mean, I'd have to find some other income.
Yeah.
But, I would still write.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? Because that's when you know that it's really your purpose, I guess.
Yeah.
It and brings you so much.
I actually mentor other writers.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's one of the things I say to them is if you think about, like, if you the success comes internal, like, if you think about why you write, then and measure your success against that, and forget about all the external stuff, the did I get a contract, did I get published by a big five publisher, did I make money. If you think about why you write, what makes you want to write, and measure your success against that, and that's what I have to remind myself of that sometimes, but by those measures, I'm winning.
Yeah.
100%.
We have to sometimes take a step back and be like, what does success look like, and what, like, everyone's definition of that is different.
Yeah.
Like, I've had someone recently message me saying, oh, you should do a podcast on, like, how you got so successful. And I was just like, what? Like, I'm not successful, but, like...
But you are.
That's my... Like, I haven't reached what I think I need to reach. Whereas in someone else's eyes, they're looking at me like, you've done this, this, and this. Like,
and that's the thing I say to aspiring authors, that you measure against your own, you know, your own goals, your own measures, but also remember that there's someone behind you that's looking at you wanting to be where you are. And it's really hard in writing. I look at where I am. So I've had 8 books published by big five publishers. So big five kind of just means there are 5 really big publishers in the world. Back when I started writing, if you told me that someone in that, in even one of those publishing houses would pick up my novel and read it and think it was not terrible,
yeah,
I would have said that would never happen. Yeah. Like, and I have to remind myself of that when, because I've got other goals, you know, big goals. Like, because I, you know, you get to one point, right, and then you go, okay, well, I'm here, so what's next? What happens next? So
yeah.
My books are not published overseas yet. And so I would like an American contract or an overseas contract. And that's, you know, it might never happen. I can't control whether that happens, but I can control, you know, how I go about my writing and how I position myself and how I think about it, how I think about my craft and whatnot. So to give myself a better chance of that happening. It might happen, it might not. But sometimes I might feel a bit despondent and think, oh, you know, this author, they're brand new. This is their first book and they've just got an American contract. And I'm not, it's not jealousy per se, because I'm happy for those people. I really am, because if it can happen for them, it can happen for me too. You know, then that's, it's, we build each other up. I'm always very fond of singing other people's praises in that respect, because it's, you know, we are, I suppose, in competition with each other, but really, if we can lift each other up, we're all better off. So this is not about being jealous, but it is about, oh, you know, like, I would really like that to happen for me too.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can find yourself being a bit despondent. But when I think about things like that, I think, hang on, think about all the people that would love to be where you are and be grateful for that. And be proud of it too. Like, be proud of how far you've come from this, you know, person that used to sell 5-cent magazines to her friends. But when I started, I really had no idea what I was doing. And I think this is not just true for writing. I think it's true for everything. I think the reason that I've been successful is I had a little bit of talent. That fine, a
yeah.
little bit. But it's about persistence. It was about having goals and not giving up.
Mm.
And when I come up against a roadblock, I'd see it as a challenge, not as the end of the line. I'd think, okay, how am I going to overcome this? Okay, you don't want me. Well, I'm going to find myself another avenue yeah. to go down, you know. And I think that's how you do end up being successful. And you've done that too.
Yeah, you've got to back yourself every day.
Yeah.
And show up every day.
Well, yeah.
Even if it's 1%, you've just got to show up and... Like, have you heard the saying, like, if you knew how many more, like, say you had 10 more no's ahead of you to get to your yes, you would keep going. Like,
yes.
You just have to get, like, another no is just a step closer to the yes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you're going to get there. It's just like, rejection is redirection.
Absolutely.
So it's like, that probably was saving you from having the wrong publisher. They didn't have your best interest. Like, you wanted to get the right person that really wanted to make it happen for you as well.
It's so true. And you don't want it. Like, I always will say to writers who are starting out, if they've had a disappointment, it only takes one person to say yes.
Yeah.
And exactly. All of us who are published can tell multiple stories of rejection, of the one that didn't work out, the editor that, or for me, like the journalism lecturer that told me I couldn't write. And I feel like I wish I knew his name, because I'd love to send him a whole stack of my books.
Your karma has got him and he sees your stuff all the time.
And now I think about it, I was an 18-year-old girl being told that by a man who was really just some sort of old hack at a university who was probably, like, not particularly successful himself. Like,
exactly.
So, but I took that criticism on board at the time. Yeah, so I don't know. I think you're right. You have to back yourself and you have to know that you just need one person to back you. Like, and
yeah.
if you don't back yourself, you're not going to find that person.
Yeah.
If you don't put yourself out there, if you don't, it's so hard, like in any profession, to go and knock on the door, or in my case, to, you know, send off that email with the manuscript in it. It you're really opening up yourself and your heart to rejection.
Yeah.
But you can't get anywhere without doing that. And when that affirmation comes that someone has read your book or seen your work, no matter what your work is,
yeah.
and they want it, nothing can beat that feeling.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, this person really wants me. It's
yeah.
a pretty cool feeling. And I heard another quote recently is, you already have the no, So why not try for the yes?
Yes. It's so funny because I'm such an A-type in everything else, but in my creative life, I'm completely chaotic.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at my house. My house is very neat and tidy and whatnot. And my desk is tidy-ish.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've just finished work for the day. But by tonight, it will be pristine.
Yeah.
But my head is just a complete bundle of chaos. And I don't know what's going to happen in my stories before I write them. Like I know what I'm going to write about, but I don't. In writing, there's two types of writers. They're called plotters or pantsers. And okay. So a plotter is someone who, you know, outlines the story in detail and knows exactly what's going to happen. And a pantser is called that because we write by the seat of our pants. And that is me. I'm a pantser.
Yeah.
We'll have a big secret in the story and I'll know that there's a big secret, but I won't know what the secret is until I get to it. And
oh,
sometimes I panic that I'm not going to figure it out before, but I always do. And that's...
I love that. It's like in Gossip Girl, how they decided who Gossip Girl was in the very last season.
It's about trusting the process and it's about the creative brain. And I believe that my story exists in my creative brain and it reveals itself to me as I need to know it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't give me too much information all at once.
Yeah.
That's
cool. I like that.
And I just trust in the process. If the story excites me enough, I start writing it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will know. Like the story that... The Studio Girls, I'm just trying to think if I knew that secret because there is a secret. I knew a bit about the secret, but I didn't know 100% what it was.
Yeah.
Often characters turn up when I'm writing. I'll be writing and a character will just turn up on the page. Like they're supposed to be a minor walk-on character. Like, for instance, in The Secret Life of Shirley Sullivan, a midwife appears, which is not unusual because the character's having a baby.
Okay.
And so the midwife's there.
Yeah.
And she becomes one of the integral characters in the book and is actually, I don't want to say too much in case people haven't read that story, but she actually feeds into the secret in the book. But I didn't know it. When I didn't know it beforehand. And then when she turned up on the page, I went, oh.
You hold now the secret.
Now I know who you are and what this is all about. So
it's like you're having these downloads almost, like just drop in. That's really cool.
I see my books like a movie,
but
not like I'm in the movie. So like I'm the point of view character. Like I see it through their eyes. Like not that they're me, Lisa, but when I'm the writer, I'm inside that person's head and I can see all the other characters, but I can't see myself because I'm the point of view character. So that's kind of how when I sit, and it only happens when I put my fingers on the keys.
Okay. Weird.
I know, it's a bit weird. But not every writer is like that. Like if you could interview 25 writers and they and say, oh, so I've heard, you know, that this is what happens, and they go, no, that's not how I do it.
Yeah.
So, It's very
would be
individual.
So much more logical. Yeah. That's really cool. But that is definitely creative though. Like it's just chaos that comes out of your brain.
Yes.
It's just like, I once heard a really good quote about creatives are just intelligent people having fun or something like that.
It's definitely fun. But like the job of being an author, not all of it is fun all the time. Like there's an awful lot of admin.
Yeah.
And you're running your own business. Even if you're like, I'm published by a big publisher, but I'm still like on a contract. And so I'm a contractor to them. I sell them the book and I sell them the rights to publish it. So you're your own small business. So there's all the things that go along with running a regular small business. My brain's not always geared up for that. Like you kind of got to switch between someone being really creative and having that lovely messy process that's so much fun and then being a businesswoman who has to invoice people and you know, and think about cash flow and that sort of stuff. So it's you know, but I guess I didn't really realize that when I started.
No, I don't think I realized that when I started my job business either. I went from being like having this really negative mindset around admin work and like being a receptionist and all this stuff to like then starting my own business because I was like, I just want to be a creative all the time. And it's just like, no one told me that you then have to do 10 other things. And a lot of it is admin and invoicing. And it's just like, I try and make my invoices and quotes look really aesthetic because I'm just like, at least it looks pretty.
Or maybe I should get you to do mine. Mine are very boring.
I just feel like I would, if I was getting a quote from someone and I opened up what mine looked like, I'd be like, whoa, that's cool. Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
I try and do a little bit of admin every day. I think you recommended it, that Steph Pace planner.
You did buy it.
I did.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say, though, I wish I could have that planner in a smaller size because it doesn't fit in my handbag.
Oh, because it's a big one, isn't it?
It's a big one. I got the big one. I got the big business one.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it.
I don't even have it, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
I just told you to get it.
But I really could. I really couldn't find a planner that suited my needs. I'm going to say something controversial. I'm not allowed to say something controversial.
Go for it. Love it.
I really hate being marketed to by people who make planners that as a busy mum. I find that marketing offensive because I'll tell you why. Because I bought a planner. I won't mention the company, but I bought a planner from another company before. I spent so much money on planners that haven't worked out for me this year.
She has a real thing for planners, guys.
I have a thing for planners, and I usually use... I can't remember.
I remember the...
Rifle Paper Co. is the one that I love, but I like the spiral bound one, and I couldn't...
You have a few prerequisites.
Yeah, I've got a lot of prerequisites, and that is the only one that meets them specifically. The Steph Pace one is good, but too big.
Yeah.
But note, I still like Steph Pace. If you're listening, Steph, make that in a smaller version. They do make a smaller version, but the smaller version doesn't meet my prerequisites, doesn't have... I'm very fussy, okay?
Anyway. She knows what she needs.
I don't like being marketed to. I feel I am a mother, but my children are adults now. And one of them lives at home, but the others do not. And I feel like I find it kind of... Like, I'm not opposed to busy mums having planners, but when I went out into the market to look for something... Everything was geared towards people with children, and no one seems to think that women have business needs. They were either like, you know, they're very masculine, very sort of not aesthetically pleasing, because that's one of my prerequisites, is that it has to be aesthetically pleasing. So I was getting these really ugly planners that are clearly masculine and designed for men, by men, maybe. And then these things that have, you know, lots of family-orientated stuff. There's very little stuff for business women, for people who want a nice-looking planner.
Yeah.
But with stuff, like, with actual room in it to write, like, I have a lot of stuff in my planner.
Yeah.
Sorry for the planner talk. This is
you know, no, now people, you're getting... No, people will relate to this.
I just, like I said, I don't have... I once was a busy mum. Don't get me wrong. They're allowed to have some of the market, but I get frustrated that people that the business side of women is not recognised. That we can only be seen as one thing, a mum or nothing, you know. And that just frustrates me.
Yes, and yeah, it's hard to get into it because obviously it's quite. It's very, you've got to tiptoe around things sometimes, hey, but like the whole concept of why is things marketed towards mums and mum, like the term, like a title of being a mum is something that's just like, I don't know, I've struggled in my life to be like, I'm not actually busy unless I'm a mum or... Yeah. I don't have a reason to be tired unless I've got kids and all this stuff. It's just
it excludes people who don't have children for whatever reasons, whether they've chosen not to or not been able to. But not only that, as a mum, I am a mum, and I've had a career my whole life whilst being a mum.
Yeah.
sometimes I'd like to be seen as something other than a mum. Like, I don't have a problem with being a mum or being seen as a mum, because I am one.
Yeah.
And I love my kids, and I loved being a mother of young children. And it is tiring, but there are other things that are tiring too. Yeah. But I did find it quite, during those years when I was struggling to, you know, to be known as an author, I would go, when my kids were quite young when I was first published, particularly my youngest was still at primary school when I was first published, and I would go to events, and the first question people would ask me was, how do you balance your family life with being an author? And it used to really frustrate me. It doesn't frustrate me when it comes from a mum who is trying to be an author. Like, if they're asking for advice, like, how do you deal with it? That's different. I 100% understand that question. Mm. But when it is a journalist saying, you know, how do you fit this into your busy life as a mum, I'm insulted by that, because ask my husband how he fits his job into being a dad. Like, it's so frustrating. And being an author is a job. Like, I fit my being an author into my life the same way that people who work at Coles, and the same way that people who teach or work as nurses or work as paramedics or as interior designers, all those people have jobs. And, you know, it's really frustrating. It's like, it's, and I've also had several times, what does your husband think of you being an author and being out doing all this at these events at night? I said, he thinks the money's great. He's retired early.
I love that. That's such a slay. But, like, fucking oath to that, because how many planners do you see designed for busy dads?
Yeah, none. And that's my point. Like, like I said, I am 100% happy for there to be family planners, and I get that, and I used those when I had, you know, three little kids at home. Kiki K did this amazing one with a big, you know, lots of space for a big wall planner. I love all that, and I'm certainly not trying to take that away from mums who love their planners. Please don't think that, but I just think that the business world, if you're listening, planner people, because I love your planners, please market to some of us who are not just mums, we do other stuff as well.
Yes. Your children are older, that they're not 100% a part of, you don't have to really think about them that much in your daily life anymore.
Or you're someone who's not planning on having kids or hasn't had kids yet. Yeah, so.
And your life is just your life or a business-focused life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that point up, because... Yeah.
Sorry, we've gone really off track now.
No. Oh, I love it. I'm just sitting here thinking about, like, this is such good chat.
Good grief. I'm a shocker for this. I just divert all over the place. This is you're inside my writer brain now. This conversation is exactly how my books go. But it's strangely enough, I do actually bring the books together. They do somehow end up making sense and don't go all over the place.
Oh yeah, that's where I was going on that tangent. Well, I literally never ever write anything down before I record a podcast. I usually come up with the title of the podcast. Do you ever come up with the title of the book before you start writing?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always, but I love it when I've got the title first. I came up with The Studio Girls before I wrote the book.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's always a good sign when I've got a good title for the book. It does sort of focus you on, you know, it gave me this is a strong title. I've got a strong idea. I think this is going to work.
It's kind of like your design brief.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And that's what the same with me when I'm recording an episode. I'm like, oh, you've got a good clickbait title. And now it's just like, just somehow drop that quote in the episode. And then everything else will just come from there.
So what are you going to call this one, do you know?
I haven't thought about this one.
Oh, no. Is that not a good sign?
No, but it's just the chaos within us that's going to come from it. But sometimes I'm just like, it's hard to clickbait titles when I've got a guest on, because I'm like, I want to include their name and all that sort of stuff. So it's like, what do you think we should call this episode?
Maybe The Chaos Within is a good one.
The Chaos Within a Creative Brain.
Yeah.
With Lisa Island.
Yeah, that sounds.
Yeah.
That sounds like me.
Well, only the listeners will know what we've titled it. But we should probably actually talk about The Studio Girls. That is the book that's launching tomorrow.
Yeah, good grief.
Yeah, one hour into it. But yeah, let's talk about it because I'm just looking at it, the beautiful title now. Can I just ask a question you can be brutally honest with me?
Yeah.
Is it anything like The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo?
It's being compared to The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Perhaps it's the cover that's giving that vibe as well.
No, there is a similar, now that I think about it, it's so weird because I love that book, but I never thought about it, like, not once when I was writing the book. But lots of people have made that comparison.
Yeah.
And I think it's because there's two timelines in the book. So it's not a modern day timeline though. It's 1999. How cool is that?
That's
it's
my birth year.
Oh my God. Good grief. Oh, you're born the same year as my son.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, but 1999 is a really pivotal year, and you won't know because you weren't born.
No, I was born right at the very end of it.
But that year, we were all really worried about the end of the world.
Yes.
Like,
Y2K.
Yeah. And I had a job. I was quite young. But I had a job as what was it called? Like, I had to manage. I was the risk assessor for our business because I was working in training, I think. I had a training and occupational health and safety. I don't know. It was a bit of a, you know, I was working for a small business, wearing lots of hats. And that was part of my brief, was to make sure we were Y2K ready. And I was so scared, like, because I was thinking, I think I've got it. I'm across this. But, like, what if I've got it wrong? Anyway, so the timeline in the book is 1999, and it's the last week of 1999. It starts on December 27, 1999, and goes through to New Year's Day in the new millennium.
Wow.
And in that timeline, the four women are older. They're not elderly. Like, they're not like some of my other books have got protagonists who are in their 70s and 80s, but these women are in their 60s.
Yeah.
And it starts with them at a reunion. And they're at a reunion at this place called the Hollywood Studio Club, which was a real place that really existed from the early 1900s right through to about the mid-70s, early 80s. And it was a place for young women who wanted to be stars, women who flocked to Hollywood to have a career in the movies. You didn't actually have to be an actress. You could also be a makeup artist or a writer or work in fashion. But if you wanted to work in the movies, you were eligible to live in this place.
Yeah.
And it was a place that was provided as a safe haven because lots of young women came from all over America predominantly, or all over the world, but predominantly other places in America, and got themselves into trouble because they were naive and Hollywood was a pretty sort of sleazy kind of place.
Yeah.
And so this was like this safe haven, the Hollywood Studio Club. And it was like an apartment house for women, but it had like a house mother, like this, you know, woman, and they had a curfew and, you know, there were rules, no men above the ground floor. So you could meet your date in the area downstairs in the foyer, but you couldn't take him upstairs you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so these women met in the 1950s while they were living in the studio club. And most of the story is set in the 1950s, but there's this ongoing timeline in the last week of 1999 where they meet at this reunion, and then something, which I won't tell you, but something happens, and it sort of, because there's been a fracture. They were the best of friends, and there'd been a fracture in the group, and this thing happens where they come back together, and then we slowly, as the book goes on, what has happened in the past to cause this major falling out is revealed.
So
I guess that's why there's the comparison between Evelyn Hugo and the book is because there's the whole Hollywood glamour side of it, but there's this sort of like story in the foreground in the sort of more modern period,
yeah,
with older people telling this story, and that is how the secrets are kind of revealed.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited for it. After this is like jump in, but after your recent travels, have you had a few signs dropping for what your next book might be?
I'm midway through my next book.
Yeah.
And this is so weird because I've started writing these dual timeline historicals where there's two separate timelines, and the next book's got three timelines.
Oh,
yeah,
very different to everything else.
Yeah, I wrote before, so I've got, this is my third one with the dual timeline, but I wrote two contemporary women's fiction books before that.
Yeah,
One called The Shape of Us, which is probably my favourite book.
Oh.
I love The Secret Life of Sheila. I like them all for different reasons, yeah, but The Shape of Us is a really personal book because it's about body image and about, yeah, how women see themselves and how, yeah, so it's set in a weight loss forum, but it's not about, like, it is about the messages we get about weight loss, but it's not a pro weight loss book. No. So if anyone wants to read that book and they're triggered by weight loss stories, do not be afraid. This is about body positivity.
Yeah.
So it's quite, I'm going to actually go back. I just got the rights back to that book that was, yeah, published by Pam McMillan in, I think, maybe 2017.
Yeah.
And I've just got the rights back to that and I'm going to re-edit it. It's a bit fat,
yeah,
like as in it's 130,000 words long, and oh, most of my books, whoa, are about 100,000 words long, and it's probably got 30,000 words too many.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back and edit some of that out. And I also, there's a few things that I'm more confident in saying that I probably shied away from in the initial
launch
book. So yeah, I'm going to re-edit it and modernize it, I think.
Yeah.
So. But you can still find old copies of the book if anyone's, you know, you can still, I think it's still available online. Or I've got copies, if people can buy them directly from, yeah, me if they're really desperate to read it,
yeah,
in the meantime. But I love that book.
No, that sounds like an amazing book.
Yeah. It was the book that I always wanted to write.
Yeah.
You know, about, oh, it says all the things that I want to say about, yeah, being a woman living in a woman's body.
And we were talking about all this just before we put the mics on.
Yeah.
Which I was thinking it would have been great to capture all that. But it's one of those things, I've never actually really brought body image up on the podcast because I kind of hate giving it that much attention.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's not a topic of conversation, people's bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we were talking about beforehand. Yeah. So that's, I think, I've thought about that a lot in my life, and that is what that book is born from. So
yeah.
I'm quite proud of that one, even if it is carrying a bit of extra weight itself in the shape, yeah, of 30,000 words.
Yeah, I'd love to read that one. It'd be really insightful.
Oh, I'll give you a copy. I've got a copy. Yeah. You can have one. But just remember, it's a bit too long,
yeah,
and it's a few years old, so there's probably a few things in it that are not quite, you know, like. Actually, you can be my beta reader. You can tell me the things that
tell
that
you don't... What to edit.
Yeah, you can go. You could lose all that.
Yeah. Okay, I can do that.
Awesome.
I would love to. I'd love for you to share like your piece of advice for anyone who's listening. And it doesn't have to be people who potentially want to be an author or anything. Just like for someone who just knows that they've got more to give in their life. What would you say?
Yeah, I guess my advice is whatever you want to do, like, and whoever you want to be, like, you're not finished yet. You're never finished until it's not over, and really until you give up. So just don't give up. Like, no matter what you want to do, it doesn't matter how many roadblocks you get, it doesn't matter how many obstacles are in your way, it doesn't matter how many rejections you get, you're still in the game if you don't give up.
Mm.
And that's worked for me and pretty much everyone I know. So who's successful, they've just not said no. They've, yeah, just said, that's
no.
Not to say it's if you are really unhappy, like it's fine to give up some things. It's fine to give up things that are not working for you, that are not making you happy. But if you have a dream and you say your dream is that you want to work for yourself and you're in a job that you're not loving and you want to work for yourself, it might not be possible today, but it doesn't mean you can't take a step towards it. So you do something every day to bring that dream closer. And eventually, you know, it might take ages, but you've got the dream there in front of you, work that you can work towards. And I think when you've got those sort of goals, it makes whatever you're going through a little bit easier, because you know it won't always be this way.
Mm.
I never really thought I could be an author. Like I, you know, it was, like I said, from the time I could talk, or the time I could read, I guess, I wanted to be an author. And but I never really believed it until I was much, much older. And that's okay too, because I had all those rich life experiences. You know, nothing's wasted.
Yeah.
I really, truly believe that. If you write a book and it doesn't get picked up, that they're not wasted words, because you learn from that.
Yeah.
So if you start a business, for instance, and it fails for some reason, if it, you know, you can't make a financial success of it, it's not a failure. It's just not a financial success. And you've learned so many lessons from that you can take that forward into your next venture. So nothing's wasted. Just don't give up.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Yeah, I love it. And it's like the day before you give up might be the day. No, what is it?
You just don't know when that opportunity is going to be there.
Yeah.
So if you could be giving up and tomorrow your break could come.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. 100%.
But that's 100% exactly what it is, because I even felt that. At the start of this year, I was just like, oh, the year hasn't even begun. I'm ready to give up because of like one rejection.
Yeah.
And I'm usually never like that. I usually never let that get to me. But I think it was just like an exhaustion thing.
You know what? I also think, and you and I both belong to this amazing group of creative women.
Yeah.
That we meet together approximately once a month to have a shared working day. And that's probably my second piece of advice. Surround yourself with people who lift you up, because I know if I'm having a bad day or I'm feeling a bit low, I can tap into that creative energy of other like-minded women who are going to say, they'll understand where I'm coming from and go, yeah, that sucks.
Mm.
But also, you know, but it's okay. Like, you know, you'll get there. And it's not, they're not empty words, because we're surrounding ourselves with people who know what it takes to be a success and to work hard. So it's not just, you know, a bit of head patting and, oh, there, you'll be okay. It's people saying, but you can do it. You've done it before. You have all these skills. Look at this that you've done. Look at that you've done. So don't surround yourself. If people don't make you feel good about yourself, then they're not your people and they shouldn't be in your world. Like, don't let negative people drag you down. If people don't share your vision, they're not along for the ride with you. They need to hop off.
I love the saying also, if you're the most successful person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Yes. And that group that gets together at the Joy Collective is just, when I first stepped into that room, that first day that we all got together, the creative energy in that room, I was on a high from that for a whole week.
Same.
Like, I just really felt like I've met my people.
And that's how Lisa and I met, was that day. So that was something, I guess, I don't know about you, but that was for me putting myself outside my comfort zone, because we're all women who work independently. So just to like sit in one space and still try and do our own work, not much got done, but like it was just that feeling of, okay, I'm not alone. There's other women out there who do work for themselves, experience struggle, experience these feelings of like doubt, or like I remember that was pre-journal launch for me, and just like talking to you all about that, and just like a big theme around that also was like, you just need to put yourself out there and just like knock on people's doors and ask them, do you want to stock my journal, blah blah blah. And it's just like, you just need that encouragement from people that believe that you can do it, when you already know that in yourself, but maybe the people you are surrounding yourself with do have that doubt mindset or fear mindset, because it's just too far outside their comfort zone to even think about doing it. But that's just because they're afraid of failing, whereas you've taken the next step closer to failing but also succeeding.
It's so true. I walking into that room was outside my comfort zone too. I didn't know anyone. I'd met Lisa, who coordinates the group, the other Lisa, so many leases you can get planned. That's a funny story too, because when I met her, I was sure that she was going to be much older because people called Lisa are normally my age and she's much younger than me
too. Yeah.
But, and that's such a funny thing because I think I'm not now. I feel really comfortable in that amongst those women.
Yeah.
But when just going to that group, I figured everyone was going to be much younger than me. And there's another member of the group who's a similar age to me, but most of the women in the room are much younger than us.
Yeah.
And I was worried about that. I was worried that I would be not, like, I wouldn't fit in, or that people would see me as, you know, some old lady that didn't know what she was talking about, or that, I don't know, I just didn't, that we wouldn't vibe. Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of, but it was not the case at all.
No.
And so I was really outside of my comfort zone, but I was kind of a bit desperate at that point to meet other women who were working for themselves. I've been here at that stage for around about 2 years in Gippsland, and I'd come from an area where I did have a lot of support. I knew a lot of other writers in where I came from, in the Geelong area. So I was living down the coast, but I knew lots of people in Geelong, and I got that professional support and that creative support. And then, you know, it's hard when you move to a new place. It's not that the support's not there, it's just you haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
And so when Lisa invited me, I was thinking, oh, I don't know if this is going to work for me or not, if I'm going to fit in, am I, you know, is it going to be my crowd? But I, just the moment I stepped into the room, I immediately felt comfortable, and so many good things have come from it.
Yeah, that's right. I have felt so supported by everyone in that group since that day. So yeah, and it's just like, you just don't know what can come from though, putting yourself in those positions. Like, great things never come from comfort zones, is what I obviously say. So just like taking that chance to be like, put yourself in a room. You don't have to go back to it if it didn't work out, but like, we all just like, yeah, when are we having the next one? If there's anyone here that wants to join our Joy Collective group, they're more than welcome to. And yeah, my number one quote also, I know I've thrown a lot of quotes in this episode, and I do every episode anyway, so it's nothing new to anyone else, but you will never be judged by someone doing more than you. You will only be judged by someone doing less.
Oh, that's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
That's my favorite one. And if you think about it, it's so bloody true. Like, walking in that room, I could have said anything and no one was going to judge me because everyone's been in my position before. They've walked that path. They're like, yeah, you'll get there, you know? Whereas if I sat down with, you know, some other groups that I'm friends with or people I've been friends with, and told them like what I might be doubting myself about doing, they're probably going to sit there and doubt me too.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, that it's so outside their comfort zone, and they're like probably worried that it will fail, or are you going to make any money from it? Like, all these insecurities arise because they're like, they're going to judge you because they're like, they're doing less, they're not on that journey and they're afraid of it.
Yeah. It's a fear-based, that fear-based comparison is no good
for
anyone.
No. And it's just like, and so what if it doesn't work out? I'm glad I know now, you know?
100%. Like, oh, well, we have found our people.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So.
That's it. We're lucky.
Yeah, I guess so. That's truly my advice. Find the good people, and you know that you'll know if they're the right people because you can feel it in your gut.
Yeah. You'll walk away feeling good. Yeah. Not anxious or like you don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
You're like, when can I see these people next? Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Lisa.
Thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
It has been.
We could just go on and on and on forever.
Literally, we could talk forever.
I'm actually going to eat some cheese now.
So. Yeah. The cheese is waiting to be eaten now wine is waiting to be drunk.
Yeah.
But no, it's been so lovely chatting. I'm so excited for tomorrow night for our book launch.
Oh, me too. I'm nervous, but in a good, it's kind of like nervous energy in a good way. I'm really excited to go and talk about it. So I'm so good. Glad that you're going to be there.
Yeah. I'll be just like, yeah. So
I'll have to get some photos.
Yes, absolutely. And we can post them on Catch Me Instagram.
Cool.
But yeah, just channel excitement and you'll thrive. It's not your first rodeo.
No, it's not. No, I'll be good. Yeah, it's good to feel a bit nervous.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that. Like
it means you care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah. So you can, the best place to find me is on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I'm Lisa, who am I on Instagram? I'm at Lisa Island Books.
Yeah, that's
on it. On Instagram. But you can also find me at my website, which is, again, www.lisaislandbooks.com.
The books, they can buy them on your website?
Yeah. They can. All my books are in all the major bookstores. On Audible as well.
Oh, amazing.
Retailers and all the e-tailers as well, all the places, the normal places, Apple Books and Amazon and all the other places that you can get e-books, so they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Pretty much get them anywhere.
Awesome. Love it. Thanks again, Lisa. It's been such a pleasure, and thank you for being on Catch Me Outside My Comfort Zone.